Hi, this is Burt Reynolds. You listen to Wiener's Barbecue, and they're not giving me a damn thing for this.
Welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. And that is the second week in a row now I have opened with a classic female sitcom theme song. Last week it was the Golden Girls. This week is the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And with us on the line right now, I'm sure a big fan of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, or he was, Dave Chernichan from News 1130. Dave, do I speak the truth? Were you a big Mary Tyler Moore fan?
No, I was more of a Greatest American Hero fan at that time.
Good. I'm glad to hear that, Dave. I'm glad to hear that. I will say, though, Dave, before we get into hockey and all this stuff, last week I kept saying during the show, it was 15 years ago today. This is last Tuesday, that the Golden Girls went off the air. I found out afterwards I was wrong. It was 15 years ago last Wednesday that the Golden Girls had their final episode. So I screwed that.
Either way, does it really matter?
Dave, you know, you got a radio show here. You got to try to fill it with different things sometimes. So I tried. I filled it. I played the Golden Girls. It was part of my trivia question. I'm sticking with my choice.
Who's your favorite Golden Girl of all time?
Blanche Devereaux, of course.
Oh, that's only because she was a trollop.
Who's yours, Dave?
Bea Arthur, good Canadian kid.
Was she?
You can't have a face like that without being Canadian and playing some hockey back in the day.
Bea Arthur. Can you get this one?
Oh, this is myself, William Catt. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grooving here. I'm grooving.
It is one of the greatest theme songs ever, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's catchy.
Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I could feel so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer.
Who could it be?
I'm not going there. I'm not going there.
I tried.
I have a reputation to uphold. I am a professional journalist.
There you go. I tried. I almost had you at least.
You almost had me. But, you know, the professionalism that I have, yeah, you know, as a sports broadcaster in the city of Vancouver, I just couldn't do it.
You held back on me, hey?
I did.
You held back. With us right now, Dave Chernichan from News 1130. With us to talk a little National Hockey League. So, Dave, let's get into last night's game. I mean, these series have been very entertaining, but first off, Buffalo leading Ottawa 3-0. It was all Ottawa in game one. Game two could have gone either way. Game three, you win 1-0. It obviously could have gone either way, but a great defensive effort by Buffalo in last night's 1-0 win. Daniel Alfredson with the garbage 1-0 goal to win the game for the Senators. Any chance, I guess, is the question. There is a chance, but what are the prospects of Buffalo coming back in this series?
Well, I think, as the theme song to Greatest American Hero said, a wing and a prayer.
That's it, eh?
On a wing and a prayer. And you know what? They better practice their Hail Marys. Go to Vishnu, go to Joe Boo, and get them to tap their hockey sticks. You know, they better dig down deep and try anything here because, like, I just can't believe how Buffalo, how they cruised through the regular season, they cruised through the first two rounds of the playoffs, and all of a sudden they've gone Canucks. They can't score. And Ryan Miller can't be blamed. He's been playing absolutely great for them in net. But, I mean, where has the offense gone? And I think what happens is at this time of year, you have to be good, you have to be fast, you have to be strong. But Ottawa's a bigger team, and I think Ottawa is taking it to them physically. I think Buffalo is a little beat up and really didn't expect Ottawa to play as physical as they have. I mean, when Daniel Alfredson is throwing a body check, you know that things are going well for the Senators.
And what does it say about that top line for Ottawa? That the fact that in the playoffs, sometimes you'll see they stack up all their top checkers, all their top defensive pairings against this one scoring line, and Ottawa's scoring line is delivering in this series.
Absolutely, and they're doing the job that they're paid for. And they knew the pressures of the failure of the last 2 years, and last year especially. I mean, last year they were picked one of the teams to win the Cup along with Vancouver. Both teams failed. One of them made the playoffs, one didn't. You know, and I think this team has learned that as much skill as you have, you still have to have the grinders. Like Peter Schaefer, the former Canuck, I mean, he didn't throw a single body check when he was here. All of a sudden, he's hitting in these playoffs. Chris Neal is a definite playoff performer. He's been doing a great job. Ottawa's defense, I mean, could Anton Volchenkov actually block? I think he has more saves than Ray Emery this series so far.
And Buffalo, they talk about the power play. Is it Ottawa's penalty killing or Buffalo's power play?
I'm going to say it's a combination of both. Ottawa's in great position to block the point shots. Buffalo has a lot of puck-moving defensemen led by Kalinin and a couple of their other guys. But, I mean, Ottawa just seems to be in position. And it doesn't seem that they are giving Buffalo enough time to really set up and get things going. I mean, where's Chris Drury disappeared to? Where is Daniel Briere disappeared to? Derek Roy, another kid. Jason Pominville, who had a breakout hockey season this past year, scoring 30 goals. You know, he's done nothing this playoff. Where have they all gone? I think it's it's Buffalo's lack of finish and lack of drive to get to the net that really has them stifled. And you know what? It kind of makes you wonder, and I realize this probably doesn't play into anything, but it really makes you wonder, did Ray Emery get into their heads when they had that brawl during the regular season and Emery took on their tough guy, Andrew Peters, as well as Martin Biron, but when he was still there? I mean, you have to wonder about that. They don't want to go into Emery's crease. The guy's psycho, and that's exactly what the players know. He'll be a blocker to the face, a stick to the chin. He doesn't care.
And also, when you stick on Buffalo, Tim Connolly and Dania Zubrus, they got 8 points each in the playoffs, but no goals, either of them.
Zubrus has never been a playoff performer. I would have never traded for him, you know, especially with what Buffalo gave up. They gave up a high draft pick for him. And, I mean, you know, I hate to use a stereotype, because it's changing every day. But, I mean, Zubrus is your typical, what most Canadian people think is your typical European hockey player. Great during the regular season, shows flashes of brilliance, and then when the playoffs come around, they're nowhere to be seen.
Dave, are we dissing Buffalo a little too much here? I mean, it has only been three games, and two of them, one's a double overtime and one's a 1-0 loss.
The games could have went either way, but when you're sitting down 3-0 in a series and you're a team that's picked to win the Stanley Cup and you're already down and you are behind the worst eight ball possible, I mean, I think it's only happened twice in the history of the NHL that a team has come back from a 3-0 deficit to win the series. And that was, I think the last time was, 30 years ago? 40 years?
I think the Islanders did it. They had a team that did it, and I believe it's the 40-something Leafs did it, 42
yeah.
Leafs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a damn near impossible feat to do. But, you know, it's one of those things where you have to be able to overcome and adapt, and you have to be able to win that one. I mean, everybody talks about Game 4 being a must-win game, but if you don't win Game 3, you're toast. And if you're toast, you know, you're not coming back. I'd be amazed if they even make this a six-game series, let alone a five-game series.
Dave, moving on to the other series, and this has actually been quite excellent hockey in this series. Detroit and Anaheim tied 1-1. Your thoughts on these two teams through two games?
I think this series is going exactly as I planned. It's hard-hitting. It's fast-paced. It's a lot of puck movement. I mean, look at the Niedermeyer brothers again. I mean, they finished off the Canucks, and what do? They even up the series in game number two. The problem with Detroit now is age is going to start affecting them. They're playing Chris Chelios way too much, and that's only because they're forced to now. They're down two of their top defensemen in Cronwall and Schneider due to injuries, and Detroit, I don't think, has enough depth on the back end where they can actually pull this one out. And Anaheim's the type of team where they're like sharks. They wait for the right opportunity, and then they seize it. And when they seize it, they don't let go.
Detroit seems to be a playoff, Dave, a team this year, and in these playoffs even, they tied for the best regular season record with Buffalo. They lost the tiebreaker. It seems, though, that people are just waiting for them to slip up, and it hasn't happened yet.
Well, I think people are tired of seeing the old cronies get it done. I mean, it's fun to watch. I mean, I would say Detroit is one of the most entertaining teams to watch because the way they pass the puck, the way they move, the way their transition game works from offense to defense and back to offense is so smooth, you know. But you have to wonder, you know, are they a little too soft? You know, yes, Todd Bertuzzi's starting to come around, but, I mean, where has Kyle Calder disappeared to? They brought Calder to be a big body to get in front of the net. He's done nothing this playoff, you know, and a lot of these other players that have usually shined during the regular season, Robert Lang really hasn't done anything. Valtteri Filippula, who was almost, you know, a 25-goal scorer this year, he's done nothing these playoffs. And you have to wonder, you know, where are these guys disappearing to?
Right, but Dave, you talk about, you know, your quintessential European hockey player. Detroit has a guy who does not fill that mode. You could make an argument he's the most valuable player in the National Hockey League. You could make that argument for having a guy in the regular season, having a guy in the playoffs, just to have a guy on your team for everything. Nicklas Lidström doing it again this postseason.
Absolutely. The guy is a phenomenal athlete. At 37 years old, to still be a premier defenseman, a number one shutdown guy, your number one power play guy, your number one penalty killer, the guy is phenomenal. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer for sure. You know, he reminds me a lot of Chris Chelios, where, I mean, these two guys, they seem like they can go on forever without slowing down. And, you know, the one guy I am disappointed in, and he's been a real playoff performer for Detroit in the past, and he's been very quiet this year, is Thomas Holmstrom. I mean, I'm used to seeing Thomas Holmstrom get in front of the net, causing all kinds of havoc, banging in like five or six, seven ugly goals in the playoffs, and we really haven't seen that from Holmstrom. I don't know if he's hurt or not, but this is definitely, I mean, when he's not getting dirty in the playoffs, like we've seen in the past Stanley Cup years in Detroit, you know, things, you know, that's part of their big offense, and that's not going well for them right now.
Sounds like, though, Dave, to me, all this isn't going great for Detroit, and it's 1-1 in the conference final.
Well,
I mean,
Detroit has a chance to win it. I mean, I'm not saying that they're down and out with the series 1-1, but I think Anaheim's the type of team that they get stronger as the series goes on, whereas I think Detroit is wearing down. I mean, yeah, Anaheim lost Chris Kunitz today for the rest of the playoffs with wrist surgery, but, I mean, he's the type of guy where you could fill in that role very easily because they have so many young, speedy guys who can play the same role as Kunitz does. And I don't think, I mean, at this time of year, it all comes down to injury. Every player's hurt. Every player is beat up. Every player has bruises and bumps, okay? But it's who can remain the healthiest out of the teams. And I think Detroit is starting to break down while Anaheim's just getting on a roll.
And Dominic Hasek's play in these playoffs.
Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I mean, he's looking like he's 27 years old, not 42.
He is a guy, Dave. I mean, my question with Hasek is, if Detroit does win the Cup, because it is possible, you know, if Detroit loses the next three, he may never play another game in the National Hockey League. That's my question. Is this Hasek's last run? You think he'll quit after this little go-around here?
I'd like to see him quit, because only because I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of his goaltending style. Yes, he gets the job done.
Oh, he's so entertaining in net, though, to watch play.
True enough, but you know what? Put it this way. If the referees called him tight, how many throwing the stick penalties would he have a game?
And dives.
And diving, absolutely. You know, he's sickening to watch. I mean, yes, he's phenomenal when he stops the puck, because you don't know how he does it, but he does it. And any coach will tell you, they don't care how the goalie stops the puck as long as he does. And that's what Hasek does. Okay, but, you know, I'm not a fan of him. I'm not a fan of the way he turned his back on his team in Buffalo under the Ted Nolan era. I'm not a fan of the way he turned his back on Ottawa last year, and I'm hurt, when really he was slightly hurt, but there was more of a little rift happening there with the coaching staff that he didn't like, you know, and
he's a bit of a jerk is what you're telling me.
Absolutely. And you know, I've dealt with him in the media a few times, and I haven't been impressed with him as a human being. So, I mean, I'm not a fan. And, yes, he's a Hall of Fame goaltender. Yes, he's one of the best goaltenders the NHL has ever seen. Okay, but in my opinion, he's overrated.
So you don't put him up with your Brodeur, Patrick Waugh?
I think you have to. I mean, the four Vezina trophies don't lie.
Yeah.
The two Stanley Cup rings don't lie.
And the fact that, you know, he can always say against Waugh, and he'll always know he beat Waugh in that shootout.
Absolutely. I mean, Olympic gold, world championships. I mean, the guy has done it all. Well, almost everything. And, you know, he's a Hall of Fame goaltender, but I think, in essence, he's also played on some good hockey teams as well, where he's been the benefactor.
Dave, this time next week, you know, my show's on Tuesday here. You're going to have Ottawa and Buffalo are going to have three games. Detroit and Anaheim are also going to be playing three games. Detroit and Anaheim play tonight in California at 6 o'clock. What are those series going to look like, each of them three games from now?
Cool. I think it'll be either a 3-2, 4-2 series Anaheim. And I don't think you'll be seeing much past five games for Buffalo.
So this time next week, Buffalo won't be going on, and you think Anaheim will be up 3-2, or yeah, that's it.
Absolutely.
Cool.
I can give Detroit one more. They're just too good. Detroit is really too good. I give them one more, but I don't see them that series going past six.
You excited for the Memorial Cup?
I think everybody in this city should be excited for the Memorial Cup. And let me tell you why. It comes around, this thing comes around almost as often as Halley's Comet. It comes around once every 30 years or so. I mean, I'm going to be 64 years old before this thing comes around again. And I am so excited. I mean, junior hockey, to a lot of people, yes, we know about the Vancouver Giants. Yes, the BC Hockey League's been around for a while. Yes, there's the expansion team in Chilliwack. But unless you go to the games and see how entertaining they are and see how balls out these kids play, it's phenomenal hockey. I mean, all you had to do was follow the Medicine Hat Vancouver Giants series in the WHL final. I mean, these two teams could have really just tanked it in that final and said, whoever wins, wins. We're both going to the Memorial Cup. Let's both not go in beat up, and let's beat the heck out of the Eastern clubs. Okay, they didn't do that. They went to double overtime of Game 7. It was a good shot that beat Tyson Smith from Medicine Hat, so they win the WHL championship. And I'll tell you, it is great hockey. I'm looking forward to it. I've never seen anybody from the Quebec League or Ontario League play. I'm a West Coast guy. And I am so interested in seeing, you know, like, we were asking around our newsroom today, where is Lewiston, Maine? Where is Plymouth, Michigan? You know, I don't know. I'd have to check the map. Like, off the top of my head, I don't know, right? But, I mean, these are two good hockey clubs. You know, Lewiston has a couple of first-rounders. They have Marc-Andre Cleish, who's going to be a high draft pick. and they have Jonathan Bernier, who's a first-round goaltender, as well. I don't know that much about Plymouth, but that's the excitement of it, is seeing these teams to see who could come out of there, out of the OHL and out of the Q, and we're going to see Medicine Hat in Vancouver again. And I think it's an event. I'm surprised it's not fully sold out. They opened up more tickets. They go on sale tomorrow. I'm not surprised that most tickets are gone, but I can't believe this event isn't sold out yet, because it's going to be absolutely a phenomenal 10 days of hockey that I cannot wait to get to the rink.
Is the final sold out even?
The final sold out.
The final is sold out, okay.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's still tickets to the Giants games, and, of course, those will be not the walk-ups or people who are just deciding now, hey, you know, I'll get some tickets.
Right.
But I mean, you know, it's going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal event, and I really look forward to watching it because, I mean, this is a national championship these kids are playing for. It's their Stanley Cup. I mean, these are kids, you know, some of them can grow the playoff beard, most can't. You know, these are kids that are going to war, and I don't mean to berate that term, but they're going to hockey war against each other, because there's not only pride for your league, there's pride nationally and internationally as well. I mean, the Memorial Cup is the last chance for NHL scouts, pardon me, to get a look at these kids before their draft day, and they're going to want to see who's a playoff performer. I mean, you could see a kid take Spencer Mihajlovic from the Vancouver Giants. Here's a kid, he's ranked 36th overall by Central Scouting, which is a second-round pick in the NHL draft. Now, what happens if all of a sudden he lights up the Memorial Cup with 11 points in five games? You know, this could bump him into a low first-rounder. You know, or if he all of a sudden stinks out the joint, maybe he falls to the third or fourth round. That's how it works. And there's a lot more on the line. There's kids playing for contracts, kids playing for their lives, and their hockey lives, for their future, especially the 20-year-olds. And you always feel for the 20-year-olds because they never get another shot at it. And they are. It's usually the 20-year-olds that really step up and do the damage, because they know it's now or never, and they don't want to be looking back thinking what could have been.
Sure is a stark contrast to the multi-millionaire athletes we're watching in the NHL today, hey? And major pro sports in general.
Absolutely. And you know, it's like watching Vancouver Canadiens baseball during the short season up at the Nat. I mean, these are guys where, yeah, some of them have attitudes because they got the big contract, they're first-rounders, but for most of them, they're just happy to be playing professional ball. And it's the same as these young kids. I mean, they're good kids. They're all going to try their best. They're going to put their hearts out. They're going to hit. They're going to fight. They're going to go hard to the net, because that's what winning the Memorial Cup is all about. And let's not forget the fact that, you know, that the Vancouver Giants, if we can keep it locally, the Vancouver Giants are making their second trip. They, I mean, yes, they lost in the WHL final, but they have a lot of players who have that bitter taste in their mouth from last year, what it's like to tank in the Memorial Cup and get caught off guard. And that's exactly what happened. And the Giants look to take advantage of that when they play game one on Friday night.
So you've got a fun week of hockey coming up here, Dave. You got
Absolutely.
The conference finals and the Memorial Cup coming to town. You're happy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is an exciting time. And like I said earlier, I've never covered a Memorial Cup. It is something that I'm looking forward to. I've talked to people who've covered them before, and they say it's just great. You know, dealing with the kids is great. You know, this is raw emotion in hockey. This is what hockey is all about. Yes, as kids, when we were playing road hockey, we would always, you know, dream of playing for the Stanley Cup. But you know what? I dare anyone out there listening to go Google the history of the Memorial Cup. I mean, this is a trophy that was dedicated to the Canadian junior hockey in memory of soldiers that lost their lives in World War I and World War II. It's one of the oldest trophies out there, and that meaning also shouldn't be forgotten either, that these kids are playing for something more than just a championship.
Awesome. Good stuff, Dave. Dave Chernichan from News 1130. Dave, enjoy your hockey this week.
I plan on it and hope to see you at the rink.
Thanks, Dave.
Take care.
That was Dave Chernichan from News 1130 coming on the air. Yeah, Memorial Cup. Memorial Cup coming up this week. I don't have tickets. I have not got around to doing it, but I guess I should. I don't know. I don't know. I just never did it. I just never did it. Anyways, folks, you're listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CHI Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. All right, we are going to take a break. When I come back, we are going to get into our trivia question. Remember last week? And I got your photo. If you're listening out there, the winner of our Tiger Williams signed photo, I got your photo. It's not here at the studio today, but I told you guys I had to go pick up everything on Sunday. That is now done. I've got everybody's stuff now. We're all good for the next 6 weeks. Also, on Wiener's Barbecue coming up this summer, we are going to be giving away, it looks like, I don't have it confirmed yet, but it looks like we are going to be giving away, starting out in about early June, BC Lion tickets this season. The Lions are going to be, it looks like, kind enough to give us seats to games to give away. So that should be a fun little thing to do on the show this year. So remember, folks, on giving away today, it is going to be your choice. And it got revised. It got revised a little bit here. We no longer have a Mike Bossy photo to give away. That is over. That is done. We didn't get as many as we'd like, and my father and I kept the two. So that's not happening. Anyways, folks, we'll be giving away one of the following. It's your choice, what you want, and we're going to be giving them away again on the show until they're gone. So the Tiger Williams signed photo, they're all 8x10 signed photos. The Tiger Williams photo, no longer with us. We've got Ted Lindsay, Yvonne Cormier, we've got Gilbert Perreault, Hockey Hall of Famer, Glenn Hall, all four of those guys, Hockey Hall of Famers. And, oh, we have recently added the King, Richard Brodeur, is on the sheet, and Cesar Maniago, former Vancouver Canuck goaltender. So we've got one of those six. Call us up when I do the trivia question after we come back from the break, and you're going to have your choice of one of those six. We gave away the Tiger Williams, and I will put out a warning signal. I will put out a warning right now. Ted Lindsay was chosen. A guy last week called and said, He was late calling in about the Golden Girls question, and he's like, can I have the Ted Lindsay? You know, and I'm like, sorry, you didn't win. So there is a guy out there who's hoping to win the Ted Lindsay signed photos. And I will say, they're all signed color 8x10 photos. That these are pretty nice photos. They're nice photos and very nice signatures. So we're going to be giving them away. All right, one today, and I guess we got five more to go after that. Okay. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We're going to have Tom Wolski from the Vancouver province on the show at 5:30. We got the Preakness coming up this Saturday. Very exciting. And we're also going to be getting into a little NBA playoffs. How about the Phoenix Suns? 2-2 with the San Antonio Spurs. Getting a little tight on that one. All right, folks, we're going to be playing a band called The Masses right now. And you are listening to 101.9 FM. I'll be right back after the song from The Masses, Thrice, is played.
Talking about sports.
I never thought I could feel so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer.
Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just me. CITR Sports. Please listen.
Hi, I'm Bryant Reeves of the Vancouver Grizzlies, and you're listening to CITR 101.9.
Hi, everybody. Turn it up, turn it up, turn it up. All right, everybody, welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every single Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m., unless I am preempted for some reason, at which point case I would not be on. I would not be on that particular day. All right, folks, it is now time for a trivia question, and we're going to do a little half baseball, half basketball kind of trivia question today. So it's up to you, the listener, to find out if you have the knowledge to pull this one off. Last week, we went for all you trivia TV buffs, TV knowledgeable persons. But this week, we're going to stick to sports And there you have it, okay? And I guess, the heck with it. If you don't get it this week, I could always just carry it over into another week. Okay, here we go. Well, I'm just going to go through some things that happened today in baseball history before. Set the tone. Get everything ready to go, okay? I have the right date today. Last week, I said it at the top with Dave Chernichan from News 1130. May 8th, or I was saying May 9th last week, 1992, was the final episode of final episode of the Golden Girls. 15 years. It was the 15-year anniversary of the Golden Girls leaving the air. I was wrong. I wasn't wrong on the date that I kept saying, but I was wrong in the fact that it was 15 years ago Wednesday, last Wednesday. It was the 8th on the Tuesday, and it was the 9th on the Wednesday. And my question is, I had the two people called to answer the trivia question. Both knew the answer. How come neither of you corrected me that it was actually May 9th that I, you know, I said it was May 9th all the time, but the day that I was saying it was May 8th? And you guys didn't know either, so I don't know. Today, of course, before we get into our trivia, I didn't buy gas today. I didn't do that thing. Is this something that's actually going on? I mean, I got some emails and I saw some articles and I heard people bring it up. I mean, I didn't do it. And, you know, work on taking the bus more, all that stuff. But my question is, I mean, I didn't get gas today. I actually need gas today. Haven't got it, okay? So I'm going to wake up tomorrow with my thing completely on or very close to empty. But, I mean, we did this strike today. But I just buy my gas tomorrow. That's what I'm doing. I'm just sort of throwing it out there. I hear what we're doing today. If it's happening, I hope it is. But, you know, I'm buying my gas tomorrow. Oh, and a hello out there to my friend Ivan Siegel, who's not listening today. But Ivan, you're the man. Okay, May 15th, 1918. I just got to bring this one up. Because this will not happen ever again. Okay? Because these pitchers, I don't know if you listened to me last week, but we're gonna get on this summer. This is a summer topic for me. You know, we are into the heart. The UBC Thunderbird men's baseball team, their season ended on the weekend. And, you know, we don't have UBC sports coming up again until, you know, August, late August and all that stuff with soccer and field hockey and football get going. So that's a lot of in-between time. And, you know, I'll try to come up with some weird sports and weird stuff and do what I can do. But one thing I want to find out is how come pitchers can't pitch anymore. I do not understand how this happened in 1918. What were these guys? I mean, these guys, I don't know, I thought we were smaller then. I thought we couldn't throw as hard. I mean, one of these guys threw mighty hard, though. He was the hard hurler of his day, you know, but these guys were obviously tougher. And how come they could do it? And one of these guys is one of the greatest pitchers who ever lived. The other was in the Black Sox scandal. The team that threw the World Series in 1919. All right, here we go. This happened in 1918. In an 18-inning game, the Senators, Walter Johnson, defeated Lefty Williams. It's actually Clyde Lefty Williams, who also pitched the entire game, and the White Sox won to nothing. So the Senators beat the White Sox 1-0, both players pitching an entire 18-inning game. That's not happening anymore. No, it ain't. Also, Yankees outfielder Joe DiMaggio in 1941, began his 56-game hitting streak. You know, people talk about Barry Bonds breaking the coveted record in sports. This one, you know, DiMaggio's got one here. And granted, it's Joe DiMaggio, and that's probably why it has so much pub. But, you know, the next highest hitting streak all time, 44, Joe DiMaggio's got 56. Nobody's ever even come close. And this hitting streak that I'm told, I wasn't around at the time, that just caught the nation's attention, and it was in all the newspapers all the time. Joe DiMaggio, 56-game hitting streak, one of the all-time great feats in sports history in North America, began, wow, Look at that. It's a while now. 66 years ago today. Keeping it going. And this is starting to get into the theme of our, well, not really. Never mind. Angels Fireball in 1973. Angels Fireballer Nolan Ryan no-hitted the Kansas City Royals 3-0. And this is sort of why I got to say this. It was the first of the record 7 no-hitters Nolan Ryan threw in his career. And he'd throw another one in 2 months. So Nolan Ryan, you know, you talk about pitchers today, and all these guys go 7 innings, 6 innings now, whatever. And Nolan Ryan, he was the guy. I mean, I remember him when he was an old guy, Nolan Ryan. That's the Nolan Ryan I remember, the guy who just wouldn't go away. But, like, he wasn't like Roger Clemens who kept retiring and coming back. This guy was just good every year and striking out 300-plus batters. He was the guy to almost the very end of his career who every time you turned it on, because he was getting them at the age of 44, 45, you might see a no-hitter that night. That was Nolan Ryan. And the other guy who I got that feeling was Randy Johnson on the Seattle Mariners. You also got that. But, you know, Randy doesn't have the no-hitters Nolan's got. I think Randy's got two. He's got a perfect game, Randy. Nolan never did that one. But those are the two guys. Okay. Now we are going to get into our trivia question. Okay, here we go. At Cleveland's, and I actually was able at my parents' place to find a replay of this. I watched about two batters on television yesterday of this game. They're replaying it on some station. They're replaying this game from 1981, 26 years ago today, at Cleveland's Municipal Stadium. Now, just before we get into it, Municipal Stadium, because this is the old Cleveland Indians. My understanding is that Major League, the movie with Charlie Sheen, Tom Berenger, Bob Uecker, Wesley Snipes, all that stuff, was not shot at Cleveland's Municipal Stadium. It was actually shot in Milwaukee. There's something for you. Len Barker, the Indians' Len Barker, pitched a perfect game defeating the Toronto Blue Jays 3-0. It was the 11th time in Major League history that a perfect game had been pitched, and the first in 13 years since it was done by Catfish Hunter in 1968. Now, which leads us to our trivia question. And call us up, 822-2487, 822-2487, and you will have your choice of any of the following 8x10 signed photographs. Yvon Cornwallet, Ted Lindsay, Gilbert Perreault, Glenn Hall, the King, Richard Brodeur, and Cesar Maniego. So here is the trivia question. The third baseman that day for the Toronto Blue Jays ended up going on to a very prolific NBA career with the Boston Celtics. He also coached the Phoenix Suns, and he is currently the director of basketball operations for the Boston Celtics. Who is that guy? I don't know if you know it, but you get your choice if you do of any one of these 8x10 signed photographs. Cornwallet, Ted Lindsay, Gilbert Perreault, Glenn Hall, Richard Brodeur, and Cesar Maniego. Give us a call up, 822-2487, 822-2487. The question being, the third baseman for the Toronto Blue Jays in Len Barker's 1981 perfect game for the Cleveland Indians had a great NBA career with the Boston Celtics. Not a Hall of Famer, but he was on, you know, those Larry Bird teams. One time coached the Phoenix Suns, and he is currently the director of basketball operations for the Boston Celtics. He was also made fun of a little bit in an episode of Married with Children. So that's our trivia question, and give us a call up anytime you want. Anytime you want to try to answer this one, 822-2487, 822-2487. If we get no winner this week, we will carry over two photos. We'll give away two photos next week, so that's how we're going to do things here. 822-2487, 822-2487. Well, in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to have Tom Wolski from the Vancouver province coming onto the show. We're going to be getting into a little NBA. And then there was an odd suspension, and I want to get Tom's opinion on this one. Happened in the San Antonio Phoenix Suns game at the very end yesterday, which is a little bit of a shame. And this is actually, this is a pretty good series. This isn't a 1980s kind of series, but it's a pretty good series. And the team's currently tied up 2-2 now. And here you go. Three pivotal players on each team will be unavailable for Game 5. And you just kind of got to look at the league over when they hand out a suspension like this. And we'll get into it with Tom. But, yeah, they're going by the rule of the book. But, like, you know, this is the playoffs. This is the two best teams left in the whole playoffs going at it. And I don't know. To suspend guys at this juncture for what happened, for leaving the bench when nothing really happened, that's what happened. Robert Horry got two games, who's won tons of titles, for body-checking Steve Nash. I thought that was excessive, but for giving Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire a game each for the Phoenix Suns, for leaving the bench to join a brouhaha that never got going, they are both suspended for Game 5. That's yikes, especially Amari Stoudemire. He's one of the top players for the Phoenix Suns. So I'm not so into that one. Anyways, folks, we're going to take a break here on Wiener's Barbecue. Going to play some music. And when we return, we're going to have Tom Wolski on from the Vancouver province. You are listening to 101.9 FM.
Today, now the youth got led astray. He didn't realize that he would pay for an easy road he thought he'd pay. Cause he was blinded by the money he made. Never listened what his parents would say. Never thought about the consequences. Now 22, he ends up dead. Digging your own grave.
Saya.
Digging your own grave. For the youth, I know it's too late. Cause the boy already sealed his own fate. And you better learn from his mistakes. I'm trying to think about the risks that you take. Cause we only have one life to live. One precious life, all about to give. Only got to be true to be free. Gotta give yourself a higher destiny. From the nightmare you're living every day. Dollar bills, cheap thrills, there's no place to stay. Put the rule like a fool, eye on your supply. Tried suicide, but like a road, chew and die. Poison your pleasure, then there's at your door. Look into the people, catch a glimpse of what's in store. Yo, this is what you wanted, now your mind is haunted. Vampire suck you dry, I'll leave you with no hope. A bottomless pit, you try to fill up with your dope. The image of the boy you are is a blur. The monster inside you eating all that's pure. Even the ones that love you, cause the day you were born used to be the future. Yeah, it used to be the future. But now, you're
What you coulda, shoulda done.
Oh.
perfect in my 30 feet of space. It's not the music changed my ways. I heard a world that could have kept me dancing for a thousand days. Your face is embedded on my mind. Yes, I've been thinking about you every way you move. You play the night before. I feel it. You're turning me on. Everybody's shining. You're the moon and the sun. It's not the music changed my ways. I heard a groove that could have kept me dancing for a thousand days. Your face is embedded on my mind. Guess I've been thinking about you in the way you go. We'll be right back.
2:38 to go. The clock does stop.
Well,
that'll
be a 98-yard field goal.
A 98-yard field goal attempt.
Have you ever seen the movie with the horse? Where the horse kicks those long.
Yes, absolutely.
They need the horse. 2:38 to go. Birds.
Somebody
down.
Get the horse.
Well, that's just me being stupid. With us right now on the line, Tom Wolski from the Vancouver Province. Tom, do you know the movie I'm talking about there?
Oh, did you not get it?
Tom?
Okay, now I hear you.
Oh, you didn't hear it before?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry for that. I want to play you this clip, okay? This is from a football broadcast we did probably 6-7 years ago, okay?
Okay.
Okay, I just want to see if you can remember the movie I'm alluding to here. One moment, please.
2:38 to go. The clock does stop.
Well,
as
that'll be a
98-yard
field goal.
A 98-yard field goal attempt.
Have you ever seen the movie with the horse? Where the horse kicks those long.
Yes, absolutely.
They need the horse. 2:38 to go. Birds.
Somebody
down.
Get the horse.
What movie am I talking about? There,
I don't
Tom?
Have a clue, but I like it.
You know the one with the field goal kicking horse?
No.
I think it had Tim Conway in it.
It probably did, because he's a horse racing nut, too. You know, he's a big horse racing.
Tom, there's a movie. You're in the Actors Guild and all that. I thought there's a movie for you to go find.
There's a few movies out there worth watching that involve horse racing.
What else? I think I've had this conversation with you before. The one with Bobcat? What was that one called?
Oh, I was in that one with Bobcat.
That's
a bad movie.
What was that one called again?
That was called Hot to Trot. I was
Hot
in that.
To Trot.
I still get residuals of that one, so it's good in one way, but it's because I still get emails from people saying they see it on Cinemax and HBO late at night. But Boots Malone by far is the best horse racing movie ever. If someone can ever get it.
Never heard of it.
Boots Malone, a fellow called William Holland. It's 1951, but it's so realistic because they use all racetrack characters that were from Santa Anita. Actually, people that worked on the backstretch at Santa Anita in Hollywood Park were involved in it. That's a good one. And I enjoyed Let It Ride still with Richard Dreyfuss.
The horse gambling movie there.
Yeah.
Where the horse winked at him, I thought, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that
and
one.
And then he goes to Mutual Town and he just keep punching.
Yeah. And what about the one I saw in grade 5, but I don't remember anything about it. It was on Man O' War.
I don't remember that one.
I, you know what? My teacher showed it to us in grade 5, and I've never heard of it or seen it since.
I'm going to Google that after the show.
Yeah, a man of war horse. Well, Tom, we got the Preakness. Pimlico coming up on the weekend. And Street Sense was the winner of the 133rd Kentucky Derby. Came all the way back from 19th place early in the race to win the race. Seemed quite easily he won it by the end. What kind of horse is Street Sense?
He's a good horse. I'm not going to give a shot answer. He really is a good horse. In one way, he's good compared to the rest of the horses that are racing right now, because I think this could be rather a lackluster 3-year-old year. But he's the best of the bunch, unless Curling gets a. You know, Curling had his excuses last time, but we're sticking with. You know, let's get back to what you were talking about, Teresa. I think he's a pretty nice horse now.
So, I mean, what does it say about this horse, though? I mean, does it mean anything to come back from 19th place to win it? Does that happen often?
You know, that jock and that horse, they were the perfect pair, because for you to go by 18, for you to pass 18 horses and stay on the rail, it was like a dream race for everybody. I mean, it would never that might happen once in a lifetime for anybody where you get through on the whole field of horses, and especially in the Derby, because. You have to remember, in the Derby, jockeys don't give you much chance. I mean, they're not going to give any breaks, so he made his own breaks because he had a horse that was like a Cadillac. But him to stay there, and you're always taught never try to get through on one horse. Never try to get through on one horse when there's only one in front of you. Go around, and that's what he did. It's like the sea opened up for him as he knocked off every horse along the fence. When he hit the top of the stretch, he had two horses to reach. And the second horse was on the fence. Well, rather than go through him, because he just passed 18, he did what we're taught to do, go around that last horse to get you to the leader. And once he got to the lead, he was much the best. So it was a very courageous effort on both animal and human being with those two. A couple of horses didn't have the best trips, but, you know, he won't have those. He's only going to have eight horses to pass in the Preakness.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to, Tom. You had 22 horses who tried to get into the Kentucky Derby, and now you've got single digits for the Preakness. Is that a bigger advantage for this horse, Street Sense?
I think it's a good advantage, except the only tough part about it is the Preakness is usually known to be a speed race where because of the shorter turns. But it means, hey, you know, there's less horses to go by, and this horse looks like he can be positioned wherever you want him. You know, my thinking is, you know, Calvin Borrell, and at Keeneland and Churchill, wherever he rides, they call him Borrell because he always stays on the rail. I mean, he doesn't have to stay in the rail here with only eight horses. He's just got to get himself good position. And he looks pretty comfortable to get the second leg. It's the third leg that's the tough one.
Well, yeah, that's the one. I mean, since I've been doing this show, Tom, it seems... I'm, you know, almost every year, about 7 out of 10, you've got two horses. A horse wins the first two, and then not the Belmont. That's been the common thread here.
Well, it's just such a tough accomplishment to do. You know, you had Smarty Jones, and then Fleet Alex did the opposite. He missed the first and won the second two.
Right.
And when he got in trouble in the Derby, because he might have been a Triple Crown winner, but he had such a terrible time, a terrible trip in the Derby. And, you know, and Barbaro, we could all speculate on what could have, should have, would have happened with Barbaro. But with this horse, it's always great. The Triple Crown is great. The Preakness is always good because, you know, you got a horse that could win the Triple Crown. Where once it passed the Preakness, it's all over with. Either you do have one or you don't. This time, when you win the Kentucky Derby, your hopes are always high. Okay, we could have a Kentucky Derby winner. And I mean, a Triple Crown winner. And in all honesty, I think it's a possibility.
Right, and Tom, even when I watched the Kentucky Derby on TV, all the announcers were saying, I give them credit for their integrity at least, for not building it up as this amazing field. I mean, the announcers were saying how, you know, you race this race five times with this field, you could have five different winners. It is a weak crop this year. You said that to me also just now.
Yeah, it has been a weak three-year-old year, which is fortunate for Street Sense, but unfortunate for the public. But they, you know, they'll get a chance to go along with the hype. Like once this, if he wins the Preakness and he wins it easy, can you imagine all the hype this horse is going to get? Because especially when you have the jock who's from small town Louisiana has been riding for 30 years, and he's one of the most respected riders there is. And he still calls people sir and ma'am, and he's a real country boy, and still cleans stalls for his brother, who's a trainer, who basically raised him. His brother is a trainer in Kentucky and in the Midwest, and he works for his brother in the morning before he gets on horses for other people. And Nat's Carl, the trainer, Hall of Fame trainer, could have went to so many different jocks like Valenzuela or Alvarado. He had so many choices to go to, but he stuck with this jock because the guy was getting on the horse since he first came on the racetrack, and that's what the old timers do. These old trainers, they'll stay with you. There's such a thing as loyalty with them. It's something that's you don't see too much anymore in any sport, but especially horse racing. Loyalty, it's something that's a lost art, if that's what you want to say. And Carl stuck with Borrell. I hope they get the Triple Crown because I met Carl. I met him a long time ago when I was a kid. Very nice person. And the same, I never rode a Borrell. I've heard of him when I was riding back east. But he's well-respected jockey. And if you noticed after the Derby race, everybody shook his hand and wished him well. I mean, jocks in the jocks room. I was reading some quotes after the race, and the riders were praising Borrell and saying that if they had to get beat, they were glad it was him.
So you've met him. He is a nice guy.
He's a very nice person. Very, very humble. And, hey, just a good old country boy from Louisiana who met the Queen, sat at the table with Peyton Manning and Colin Powell. It's a hell of a ride. That's the good thing about the Derby. It is that it's the greatest 2 minutes in sports, but I'll tell you what, it's like I wrote in the column, it's what it is. It's a life-changing experience, and if you can capitalize on it, it's even greater.
Tom, Hastings Park, anything special? I'm going down there this Saturday. What do we got going on that day?
You have some very good races this weekend. They popped them up for the holiday weekend. You know, you got the Ask. Here's my notes. I was prepared for you. Well, you got the Jim Coleman Province Handicap on Monday. And that's a good one because the two horses that ran 1-2 in the opening day stake race is Ukashata, who was the favorite, and Stephenson, they're coming back to do battle, and that could be a rival we could be seeing all year with those two horses. And that's on Monday, and that's a $50,000 race, and it's 6 furlongs, so that's a good race. And then Saturday, and then Sunday, it's an outstanding field. The fillies, the 3-year-old fillies, go to war there, and it's another battle that we could be seeing all year. That's what a filly called Suva, and Chelsea's Image. Chelsea's Image is the fella Chellis, also who owns Spaghetti Mouse, and Suva is owned by Jeff Sangara, and these two fillies could be going at it all year. So fans are going to be treated in for a treat to have some pretty good racing. And then Saturday you got the Preakness, so it's a great holiday weekend out on Hastings. And I don't even work for Hastings, but that's how I feel.
Cool. And, Tom, I want to get into some NBA coming up here, but what do you got coming up on your column and your show this weekend?
Well, on the show this weekend, we followed, you've heard of Mike Hedges, the handicapper out there.
Yep.
Well, we call him the fastest man in horse racing out at Hastings, and we followed him for 2 days and all the jobs that he does. And it's an interesting feature, so we're featuring that. We'll be showing the 2004 Preakness. That's where Smarty Jones wins on the show. We got some footage from the 1960s dating back to Canadian horse racing in Canada. Woodbine sent it to us, and it is really just a cool feature. It's about four-minute feature. So it's pretty good. It's when we saw the DVD that they sent us, it just blew us away, and they gave us permission to use it. So that's 3/4 of our show. So it's going to be a good show. The column, lots of things to write about. It's just how I'm going to touch it. I might be touching on all the Kentucky Derby winners and what was paid for them prior to the Derby, which you're going to find quite interesting. Because they all didn't cost $1 million. I think the last one that paid $1.5 million was Fugazi Pegasi. Do you remember him?
Not a clue who that is. When was that?
3 years ago.
What was his name?
4 years ago. Fugazi Pegasus. It's a Japanese name.
I don't remember that one.
And I have a tough enough name. I have a tough enough time speaking English. Never mind Japanese. As you can tell, I'm battling a terrific cold.
Who won the other? Was that a Fleet Alex's year? Was that what happened there?
Was that?
I have no memory of this horse at all.
Fugazi.
Yeah, who were the other horses that year?
Geez, I couldn't tell you. I put my notes away on that one.
Right, okay. No worries, Tom. Tom, let's touch up on some NBA here, and I want to get your thoughts because I don't think this was right what happened yesterday.
I watched it.
Okay, I personally think Robert Horry, of course, the big comeback win for Phoenix. They were down 8 points with about 6 minutes to go on that one. They come back and they win it. They scored all the points at the end of the game. And near the end, Robert Horry body checks Steve Nash, benches somewhat empty Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire for Phoenix, two of the guys that leave their benches. And today the NBA has handed down their suspensions. 2 games for Robert Horry. He won't play in Game 5 or Game 6. And a game each for Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire. Amari Stoudemire suspended for Game 5, Tom. That's the NBA being a little paranoid, I think.
Yeah, because all he did was go to the defense of his players.
And he didn't do anything. He didn't. No punches were thrown or anything like that.
If you watched the game, didn't you?
Yeah, I watched it.
The announcers basically were saying he was on the court because he was getting ready to check in.
I heard the announcers say if the NBA is gonna go by the rule, technically, Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire are going to be suspended. But I mean, Tom, this is a series that is almost like the NBA Finals this year. I mean, it's probably gonna be more entertaining than the NBA Finals, and to suspend these guys for Game 5 for that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. I thought what Horry did was wrong, but I didn't really think it was that bad either.
No. I mean, you go back to the 1980s or the Detroit Pistons of the late 80s, early 90s, that stuff happened all the time.
Well, he got the game for elbowing who did he elbow?
Nash.
No, after. He got the game because he elbowed after the game.
I thought, who did? Horry?
Yep.
No, he got...
Not after the incident, he elbowed somebody.
That's what he got suspended for?
Yep.
I missed that.
Yeah, that's what the suspension was for.
Okay, well, I mean, what do you think here?
I don't think he deserved it.
No. So there you have it, and... I mean, it's just, don't you, as a fan, don't we want to see these teams going at it with their top teams on the court unless something real blatant happens?
Of course. But here's what happened. Rory was suspended for flagrantly fouling Nash and then striking Raja Bell about the shoulders with a forearm. So that's why he got the extra game.
Okay, and now you've got Stoudemire. So you think Stoudemire and Diaw, that was, you don't agree with those suspensions?
No, I don't. And I don't think, the original incident with Nash, it didn't look good because he fell into the scoreboard, into the scorer's table. But you know, these two teams are playing. I mean, and the refs were letting them battle, which was kind of cool because we were seeing an outright war between these two teams since the get go. You know, and I agree with you. I don't think two games in one. I don't think he should have got anything.
Well, I mean, it's huge, though, not to have him for that fifth game. That's huge.
Yeah. Hey, not to take you away, but let me bring you back to show you what I'm trying to do with you.
Yeah.
That was 2000, the year Fugazi Pegasus won the Derby.
Yeah.
And he was bought for $4 million. And the next year, Monarchus was bought for $170,000. 2002, R. Emblem was bought for $20,000 and won the Derby. In 2003, Funnyside was bought for $22,000. So, I mean, my point will be, if I do this in a column, is, you know, you don't have to be a millionaire to win the Derby, because when you go down the list, which I'll say for the column, most of the horses that have won the Derby since 1977 were bought for less than $100,000.
Wow. And War Emblem and Funnyside, they won the first two legs, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they won the first two legs, and like I say, War Emblem, they paid $20,000, and Funnyside, eight guys remember him to 2003, eight former school teachers and professors, they bought Funnyside for $22,000, and he made about $2.5 million. So it's just an interesting note to a wonderful event. Back to basketball.
Hold on. I want to stick on Funnyside. Whatever, because that horse was a gelding.
Yep.
Whatever happened to Funnyside? How's he doing?
He's still racing, y'all. He's still racing, but he's racing. They're picking the spots for him, and he wins the odd handicap, but not Grade ones anymore. He's found a lesser company, but they haven't dropped him in where somebody else can claim him, stuff like that. He'll go to a good home, but horses love to run. You know, they're bred to run. And if you ever go to a farm and look at babies running or see footage, young horses, the first thing they do when they're weaned away from their mother is they run around the field. They run with their mother, and it's such a beautiful sight. And that's when you realize. I finally had a chance to see that, to experience that feeling, that wonderful feeling, about 2 weeks ago when I was out on a farm. We were doing some filming, and we saw these babies, and they were just leaving their mother's side, and they were just running like crazy out in the field, and that's when it hit me. You know, as long as I've been involved in the horse racing, I'm not much for going to the breeding side, but watching these young horses, they just love to run, and Weez and I touched on that. It's funny side, he's a gelding, he's probably 6 years old now. But like John Henry, they love to run, and you know, as long as there's sound, why not run them? And that's what he's doing right now. Except he's not the notch he was. He's like any athlete; he's lost a step or two. So, but answer question: he still is running, but not at the level of competition that he was obviously when he was a 3-year-old.
Right, but he had a good career, hey?
Oh, great career, great career. And how about those owners? I mean, they probably made close to $3 million. But aside from the money, those guys. Those seven men, and especially two of them, they knew how to utilize the press and help themselves personal-wise by marketing themselves. They marketed Funnyside. They had hats and websites and so they got the most you could out of a horse, both on and off the racetrack.
Yeah, definitely for a gelding, especially.
You believe Chicago's blowing out Detroit?
Yeah, what's the score there? Last I saw, it was 22-16, Bulls leading the Pistons. The Pistons leading that series 3-1. What's going on in Game 5 here?
47-32.
Well, there you go. You're surprised about that one, huh?
Yeah, I am surprised because when you look at it, I was reading the paper, doing my homework, and when you got all the top seeds are beating the lower seeds except for that one series.
Right.
You know, because Detroit was the number one seed, and Chicago's number five seed. Now Chicago is going to be go up to 3-2 with them right now. The other two series look like they're all done.
Yeah, what's your thought of the Pistons so far in these playoffs, though? I mean, yeah, it is 3-1 Pistons, so even if the Bulls do win this game, it's still 3-2 Pistons. Yeah, from what you've seen with the Pistons and the Spurs and the Suns, do you think Detroit can compete with them?
Yeah, you know, I'm a Detroit fan. I just like the way they play because they got so many different variables on that team, and you can interchange them. It's almost as if what San Antonio can do too. I mean, they can throw out a whole their back five is like they're not players that you have heard about. They're from Europe. Like yesterday's game, they put on five players that were basically European players.
Yeah, and who's winning the world championships and the gold medals and the MVPs right now, though?
Teams with the Europeans, aren't they not?
there you go.
We talked about that last year, you and I, about how this league's going to change, and now it's been predicted by the year 2010. This league's going to be 60% Europeans because the GMs and management of the NBA teams, they don't want to deal with all the bling and all the other stuff, nonsense that goes with these players. Where they're disciplined in Europe, where they play to play, and there's no such thing as a one-man team. It's a team sport in Europe, and that's what Phoenix's coach is. That's why he's so good. He was the king in Italy.
Right, and fundamentals, and the fundamentals.
Yeah, they teach you the fundamentals, and that's why I believe they predicted it right. I believe by the time 2010 is. It's going to be a different basketball, NBA. Plus, they're going to be playing Europe anyway if they can work out the arrangements. But we're going to see a whole new league. And all this bad stuff, it's got to end. It's like football. They got to start taking a stand to get all this violence. Not on the field, but away from the game. All these players are just bad people.
Well, yeah, doing bad things. Utah 3-1 over Golden State. Looks like they're going to pull it off. Golden State basically had their playoffs, though, in the first round, getting the big upset there over Dallas. I haven't really watched the series. Have you, Tom?
Yeah, I watched it. In fact, the other day I thought if I was a betting man, I would have bet on Golden State because they swept the first part. And I thought they had a good chance, but you know, now it comes to where the cream goes to the top. And Utah is just too much for this team.
Right, and Cleveland beating New Jersey 3-1. Vince Carter struggling in that series. LeBron James, if he makes this conference finals, Tom, we haven't heard too much publicity on it yet. Granted, we're a hockey-mad culture, but LeBron James, I mean, he's taken this team pretty far at a very young age.
Yeah, unbelievable what he's done. And what's he, like 21 years old? Is he yet? Yeah, and he's just carried his team on his shoulders. And they say he's a pretty, you know, what you read about, you don't read much bad press on James. So it's nice to see that, you know, a good guy is doing something right and not falling into bad hands like we have so many of these other players. But he's done a tremendous job.
And your thoughts, Tom? Dirk Nowitzki gets the MVP award today.
You know, I knew you were going to talk about that because I had it written down. And I'm disappointed. Not because Nash is from a Canadian and he's from Victoria. I think rightfully he's carried this. Him and Stoudemire have carried his team. They made the playoffs, and usually that's who usually gets an MVP. Someone that's took their team into the playoffs deep in. And I thought Nash should have got it. I mean, he basically does everything. That one playoff game, where the announcer said they never seen someone take over a game like he did. I thought he deserved it, but they didn't want to give it to obviously Nash because. What we talked about the last time, it puts him in the era of Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Chamberlain.
Jordan.
Yeah, and they don't want to put him in the same league with those other players, rightfully so. But that shouldn't deter someone. That doesn't mean he is in the league, in the elite league with those three. But it sure means. But he still was deserving of being named most valuable player three times in a row. So what? He deserved it. Don't you think?
I believe it's Michael Jordan. You know, I'll try to check that right now. But you know, Steve Nash.
It is Jordan.
It is Jordan. Yeah. So Steve Nash, though, Tom. I mean, you're talking about Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, and Magic Johnson. Those are unquestionably the three greatest basketball players I have ever seen. And Steve Nash. We talked about this last week, Tom. He's not even close.
But that doesn't mean that you're putting him in the elite league. It means he's deserving of the most valuable player. I mean, I look at it differently. If someone is deserving, he's deserving. It doesn't mean he is in the elite league with those three players. It means that, hey, judging for what he's doing right now, he is the most valuable player. Don't take it away from him because it puts him in with these other group. Sure, he's among the elite four, but when people mention the elite players, they're not going to mention Nash maybe down the road. They're going to mention those three players, Bird, Johnson, and Jordan. They're not going to mention Nash, but still, why penalize Nash? Because he's good, and he is the most valuable player.
Could I make the argument, though, that if Steve Nash was worth the value of three times in a row NBA most valuable player, that the Phoenix Suns would have at least been in the NBA Finals once in the last 2 years?
Yeah, you could. That's valid. But wait, okay, on the other hand, Nowitzki now, where's his team? Is his team in the playoffs? They got knocked out in the first round.
Touche. I'll give you that one. But the voting's done. You know, I hear what you're saying. But, you know, my other point, Tom, is that, you know, we both agree Nash not close to the three legends we mentioned.
Oh, of course not.
Does this truly show, though, that the NBA, without a question, is not the league it was 10, 15 years ago?
Oh, definitely. The players, I still feel the players back then, we're great players. I mean, those are great players. Right now, the league has changed.
I mean, Tom, I just want to ask you, is there anybody today who's up at the level of Hakeem Olajuwon?
No.
I mean, is there, remember you had Charles Barkley, Karl Malone. I mean, all those guys. The NBA hit a heyday in about the late 80s to the early 90s to even the mid 80s. And these players just aren't coming around like they once were.
No, they're not. In fact, plus you're getting Europeans in the league now. So now it's an international league. So that changes the whole picture of what the NBA is all about. And it's my thinking is as exactly as you just said, the tough to beat the older players. And I'm not saying that because they're older players. They were good players. And it was a different time back then. You can't compare apples to oranges, but the league was better back then in many ways.
I mean, Tom, you turn on, you see them all the time, these ESPN Classic, these old basketball games. These guys go down the floor, and they're having 115, 112 shootouts, but it's not bad defense. It's because they hit all their shots.
Yeah, and they're having a good time, too, aren't they?
Yeah, they're making plays. Big men are running. I mean, I watched a play, and it caught my eye. Robert Parrish was running the fast break for the Boston Celtics. Big, it's just, and he was making moves doing it, like great layups. He was like a reverse layup almost. Guys, these big men, they don't – is it the fundamentals? I mean, they obviously have the skill. They're probably better athletes today, and you'd think they'd be better players because of it, but it's not the case.
It definitely isn't the case there, but back then those players, you knew the players back then. Now before the NBA started this year, the season started this year. Chances are you couldn't go four deep naming players on most of the team. On probably 90% of the team, guaranteed most of us could not name after the fourth player. If you could name four on a team. Back then, you knew who was on the LA Lakers.
Right. Well, that's the other point I want to make, too, is, James Worthy, a guy like him, if he's playing today, he wants to be traded from the Lakers because he wants to go to another team and to prove that he can do it by himself. That happens today. The whole Kobe, Shaquille O'Neal thing, the whole Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady thing. Now you have that going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of selfishness out there. Which, back to you mentioned the name Carter. That's why I hope the Nets get blowed out.
Awesome. Thanks, Tom. I got to get going. We're out of time. Tom Wolski from the Vancouver Province and the Sport of Kings television show. So, Tom, you think this Street Sense got a shot, hey, to win the Triple Crown? First one since 1978.
Well, I picked Curlin in the column.
Yeah, I remember you picked him to win the Derby, too.
And that's why I tell people, never ask jockeys, trainers, our owners, who they like, because they're always going to tie their horse, and they're usually wrong. And I have to go with Street Sense, not to be a chalk player, but off his last win, it was a remarkable win. And plus, once again, what we talked about earlier, he's only going to have to go past eight other horses in this race probably right now, because they haven't closed the entries. But right now, it looks like nine in there. But the good thing about it is the first four finishers in the Derby are back in the race, and Circular Key is in there. It should be a good race, but it's the same horses.
What about I'm a Wild and Crazy Guy?
I'm a Wild and Crazy Guy. He's not in it.
He's not in it. Well, I obviously enjoyed that name somewhat, but it was a little too stupid for even me, to be honest.
Well, yeah, there was a couple crazy. Hey, speaking of that, how about the girl that turned down the $3 million?
I missed that. What are you talking about?
Well, Lesper Teesburg, I had it in the call. Teesburg, the girl is an exercise rider and a trainer, and she picked out this horse for $9,000 at Teesburg out of a sale. And her fiance and two other people became partners. they wound up winning $380,000 with Teesburg for them. And then prior to the Kentucky Derby, because that's the time when people, fools meet fools, they were offered $3 million for the horse.
Oh, wow.
Teesburg. And $9,000 buy already made $350,000, like I just said, and they turned it down. And he finished 17th, beating 35 lengths. And after the race, she said, well, there's always the Preakness, you know. Well, he's not, guess what? He's not in the Preakness.
Oh.
But, you know, what would you have done?
I don't know.
I'd have to shoot you if you didn't turn the $3 million down. If you didn't take the $3 million.
Yeah, I'd like to say I'm that honorable, Tom, that I wouldn't have taken the money, but I don't think I can.
I hope not. I mean, that's when two fools met, the people that offered him, the connections that offered $3 million for a $9,000 horse, and the connections that turned the $3 million down. That could be probably one of the most lopsided losses in all of horse racing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Awesome. Tom Wolski from the Vancouver Province. Tom, thanks a bundle.
Always good talking to you.
Talk to you soon. Okay, everybody, that's it for Winners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Mike with Fletcher Head is coming up right now. Just hit that one. One?
Yeah, go.
Okay, here we go. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.